Terry Savage is the syndicated financial columnist, terrysavage.com. She's in our studio today. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Good to be standing next to you.
Isn't it a nice day in Chicago? Isn't it lovely out there?
It's a great day.
It's enough to make a person want to get on a horse and just ride around the countryside.
You know that's what I do in my spare time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the markets. What's your feel about what's happening on the indices this week?
Yeah, this is a balancing act. Good news is bad news. Bad news is good news. So we get news of sorts. The economy is slowing. Consumer sentiment is weakening. Couple of the indices have dropped, showing weakening, which would allow interest rates to come down. But there have been some reports out about jobs that the Fed watches very carefully. We'll have unemployment Friday, but this is the cost of labor index, which is an input into everything. It's bounced back up, and the Fed says, wait a minute, wages are a cost. That's an inflationary pressure. We are going to keep up with our dedicated fight against inflation. And so we have this balancing act. And what's happened is it was just a minute ago, well, maybe 3 months ago, that people are arguing over, are they going to cut three times or four times or five times? Well, start in March. Now it looks like not only may they not cut, and the futures markets are pricing in maybe 50-50, a cut before the end of the year, but someone said, gee, maybe the next move might be to increase rates. Now, today, Fed Governor Powell will announce the Fed's decision. They're not going to do anything today.
He said that?
No, they will announce it right after we get off the air. I'll stick around and see. But there's a surprise. I'm running right back.
But I'm sorry, you said, what is your expectation? What's
that? The world expects that they will not change rates today. But so they will be looking very carefully at the wording of the statement compared to last month to see if the Fed indicates, gee, maybe our next move might be to the upside.
What would happen?
It's like reading the tea leaves.
What would happen to my retirement funds or my job or the cost of
milk? Your T-bills would yield more, rates would go up, and the market would not like that because even at 5.4-ish% today on six-month T-bills, it's pretty stiff competition for stocks, for the risk in stocks. So the market's been waiting. They're looking at earnings. They look at earnings of companies like, say, McDonald's and a Starbucks today. Oh, you know, people don't have the money to afford even McDonald's. I mean, Starbucks, you look and you go, am I really paying $5 plus for a cup of coffee? I mean, like, several times I've said out loud, I remember when you put a quarter in the jar at my office for a cup of coffee. You know, so that means I'm old, I guess.
But just to belabor the obvious then, but if the rates were to drop or when they drop, that would be good for the markets. The markets would go up.
Well, it depends on what the markets are expecting. And for four or five months, the markets have been expecting that the next action by the Fed, or actions, plural, would be to cut rates. Now, the markets are saying, gee, I don't know if they'll cut this year even. Or maybe they'll cut later this year. And so there's no incentive to buy stocks when you can get, as I said, 5.4% in T-bills.
Do you think, though, there's a backlog of pressure to expand, that the markets would go up, but we're just waiting for those drops, and when it happens, we'll get a mother load of expansion, that the markets will hit 40 on the Dow?
One day we will hit 40,000. But the point is, it all depends on the context at that moment, how the market reacts. You cannot just say cutting rates is good for the market. If they're cutting rates because the economy is falling off a cliff and corporate earnings are predicted to be lower, then the market won't be thrilled.
Terry, I just wanted to share with you some of the things J.B. Pritzker has said, that inflation is not going away. He said that means the Federal Reserve may not cut interest rates anytime soon.
No, I said that.
He's a little bit worried about that. His beef, it makes it harder for people to buy a home. It makes it harder for small businesses to borrow so they can build their business. It slows growth. It's frustrating that whatever data they're looking at isn't taking into account whatever folks are going through, including what small businesses, people who are just barely making ends meet, have to pay or go through. Now, what's your reaction to his reaction?
Well, let's talk about two ways interest rates go up. We've seen them all in the last 18 months. The first thing is people notice that there's inflation. Remember, it's just a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now, that we saw inflation running at 9%+. And all of our smart listeners said, wait a minute. I'm not leaving my money in the bank at 2%, 3%, and 4%. I demand higher rates, and we drew them a map of how to buy treasury bills. And that's the free market where the U.S. government borrows trillions of dollars. They have an auction every week to pay off old debt, maturing debt, and to borrow new money as we run deficits. And the world gets together at these auctions, and I mean globally, and says, okay, given your outlook in, for inflation in the United States, et cetera, we'll lend you money. And in those days, it got up to 7%, 8% of days of inflation, the interest rates, but right now even it's 5.4% for 6 months. So interest rates don't exist in a vacuum. If you need to borrow money, and the U.S. government does need to borrow money to repay old debt, and because we keep incurring new budget deficits, they have to pay the going rate. That pushes interest rates up. The higher you have inflation, the more interest you're going to have to pay, the higher the rate of interest you're going to have to pay. So that's a vicious spiral called inflation, and we all hated it. We hated egg prices, whether it was bird flu or whatever it was. We hated the price of everything, and we hated mortgage rates going up because that should have slowed home building, although for some reason it didn't, but it stopped home selling because anybody who had an old 3.5% mortgage said, I'd sell you at this high price, but wait, I got to go buy a new house, and I'm not paying 8% for mortgages. So high rates brought on by inflation do slow parts of the economy and do lead to even higher costs because money is a cost of everything. So that's one way rates go up. Now, right now, we're worried about rates going up because another role of interest rates is for the Fed to suck money out of the economy and actually raise the rates that are charged by one bank to another, and that slows the economy. And I get that the governor doesn't. I don't want to see mortgage rates go up. They're over 7.5% now for 30-year fixed. We were under 7%. That's bound to slow things down. It does cost small businesses when they have to borrow. But the real question, if it's a long-winded Econ 101, is would you rather have rates going up because we have inflation and because people want a real return on their money? And that will happen if we have inflation. And if inflation gets out of control, they'll spiral higher. We saw that in 1980. Or would you rather have the pain of high rates induced by the Fed, or at least tightening of the money supply, to slow the economy, to really kill inflation so we don't have to worry about it?
The correct answer is the second one, right?
The correct answer is both are painful, but that one would stop inflation. The Fed doing this, slowing the economy, sadly, the way historically to stop inflation.
It's 1224, 312-981-7200. You ready to take some calls from our
absolutely.
Listeners? Let's talk to Conrad. You're on WGN. Conrad, what can we do for you? You're on with Terry Savage.
Hi there.
Hi.
Am I on?
You are.
Okay. Terry, hi. Good afternoon. The Jay Powell issue is spot on in my eyes. And what can you say about Jay Powell? I mean, a lot of people would say that he organized this little problem, and now he's trying to deal with this problem. But to get rid of inflation, the only way that I know of is to raise rates and choke off the economy. And it's sort of like cancer. If you have a cancer, you really need to deal with it and take it out of your body and cut it off if nothing else works. And obviously nothing else has been working. So he's really late to the party. Your thoughts?
Well, let's go back further than the fact that the Fed is late to the party. They were, but I thought inflation was transitory. But we pumped a ton of money into the economy. First, all the stimulus payments and so forth, that's all through the economy now. But the American Recovery Act, which created jobs and so forth, believe it or not, even the state of Illinois is still spending money that it received from the federal government. And that new money, plus the fact that we run deficits, huge deficits, smaller now for sure than we were running 3 years ago, But all that new liquidity that we created at the time of COVID and after COVID to get the economy growing, which may be accounting for the fact that unemployment is so low because there are jobs out there from all those Recovery Act programs that were started. So all that is putting pressure on the economy upward. It's not, the Fed might have recognized sooner that this money was going to cycle through the economy. And, you know, what's inflation? Inflation is too much money chasing too few
but don't
goods.
You wonder,
we didn't have the supply of goods.
If they knew then what they know now, would they have put the money into the economy and suffered 9% inflation or
the
not?
The politicians put the money into the economy, both political parties. Give me something to help my state. So politicians voted for the spending and voted for the stimulus payments of the additional unemployment. At the time, I went, wow, but look, wow, the economy could go off.
Well, because we shut the economy down because, I mean, we didn't have any choice.
But we restarted it so quickly, and we kept people from, you know, being...
Restarted what so quickly?
We restarted
the economy,
after COVID, because nobody knew then when we would have vaccines. I mean,
I'm just
going
saying
back,
that, I wonder if the politicians, knowing what they know now, would have said, okay, we will suffer higher inflation, but we need to give people money. We had to put
that
money...
Yeah, they always say that. It's not their money.
Well, but do you think that was a bad decision?
In hindsight, it was, because we could, if we had known that we could restart the economy quickly because people would get these shots and they could go out and every other person wasn't going to die on the streets, which was kind of like happening, morgues on the streets.
Well, but we could not have known that. There was 6 months period there where we told businesses they had to stop doing business.
I'm not going
to
fight the last war. The fact is, we pumped a lot of money and into the economy in various ways. It led to inflation. The Fed thought, oh, well, yeah, we're not doing that so much anymore. We won't have real inflation long-lasting.
Yeah.
It did last longer than the Fed expected. They've been fighting to get it under control. We've come down a lot. That does not mean your prices at the grocery store came down. It means they're not going up so much every month when we see the consumer price index. But it's not back down to 2%, and the Fed's fighting that fight.
The Money Lady's here, Terry Savage, ready to answer questions from our listeners. A lot of times you're scrolling through your phone or the internet while we do a commercial break, and then you're getting more information about something that you want to share with our listeners, or maybe you've had second thoughts about something you said a moment ago. Are you ready to roll?
I'm ready to roll. Let's go.
Okay. Dear Terry, I love your show. My question is, my partner sold her house and is getting interest on the proceeds, and I'm thinking about selling my house. And interest from the proceeds of both of our houses would pay for 2/3 of renting a nice place in our town. We thought about buying a 2 or 3 flat, but we're not sure if we want the hassle of that. We'd love to travel, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. What do you think about them just renting for a while? And
well, there's more to that question. First of all, I think you have two friends who now could each earn, let's just say Treasury bills, 6 months. So for 6 months, you could earn about 5.4%, each of you, on the money you get from selling your homes. If the Fed wins, destroys inflation, the interest you earn will be down around 2%. I had Treasury bills 8-10 years ago when the interest rate was 0.25%. So you now could get interest of 5.4% on, you know, on $100,000. That's a, you know, a very nice amount of money and maybe enough to pay your rent.
Why not sell the two properties,
but
take the proceeds?
Well, that's the first part of it. So number one, you don't know what the interest rate you're going to get is unless you lock it in. You can lock in 10-year Treasury notes for about 4.75%, 4.75% today. Okay, so, but you can't count on that interest rate always being the same. And maybe interest rates will go up and maybe they'll go down. Number two, did I hear inherent in that two friends want to each take their equity and combine it and own a house or a property?
I'm assuming they're a couple. I'm assuming this is a couple.
Well, it's two separate houses now.
That's true. It does say that. My partner sold her, but it's my partner sold her house and is getting interest on the proceeds. I'm thinking about selling my house.
Okay, so if you keep your interest separate, and you think you've got enough interest to rent, fine, that's fine. But
I mean,
just remember, if we have inflation, rents. Ask anybody who's looking to rent. Rents are high too.
I know that, but if rents are high now, so too are mortgages. I would rather pay rent and then I control my timeline. I can stop renting whenever I want and I can buy when interest rates go down.
It all depends on what you want to do with your life, really. Just like every other financial planning question, the age, the stage, are you going to need to move Do you have a job? Are you retired? Will you stay here? Well, one, you know, that's, you're now joining together in a rental. So do you both agree to move to Florida at some point when one of you wants to? Kind of thing like that.
Hey, John, ask Terry, how far back do I have to keep income tax returns?
No, you are so asking the wrong person. So because
I've
my
never heard
family,
you say that.
Oh, my goodness. I have a room in the basement with shelves. And if you asked me to pull out my income tax returns from 1972, I could do that. They're all in little boxes, like a mausoleum, I call it, of my taxes.
But isn't
all
it
on
6 years? It's a
but
six
no,
year.
The truth is 7 years.
Seven.
And then, of course, if you've committed fraud, there's no statute of limitations.
Okay.
But 7 years. Yeah, I know. It's just a family. It makes me laugh. One day they'll haul up a big dumpster and have a bonfire or something.
Bob, you had a question for Terry Savage. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Love you both. Love the show.
Thank you.
You help all the time. I work with a big financial advice company, one of the biggies. I am 64 years old, a few years away from retirement. I currently have around 70% of holdings in equities. They surprised me by recommending I push that up to over 80% into equities. I'm kind of surprised at that advice. Would love your reaction, Terry.
Well, kind of sounds like you're not sleeping at night. And the first rule of the stock market is sell down to the sleeping point. That's an old adage. Look, Jim Stack of Investec, who I have followed for 30 years, in fact, I'm going out to interview him in Montana next month. He's been so good and so right. Has his clients around 50% in liquid assets, like the chicken money now. Chicken money.
Right.
And he's had that going on for about a year. Of course, you get paid 5.5% for chicken money today. I don't know anything about you, your lifestyle, how much money you have.
He's not 20.
If you have, if you have tons of money and your goal is to pass it on to the next generation and you have plenty of income coming in, although you say you're going to retire, that might be a justification. But if you're just an ordinary person who's saved all his life and had the benefits of this big bull market and is approaching retirement, I couldn't sleep that way. And I think it might call into question whether it's time to find a financial advisor who is more appropriate for someone at your stage.
Bob, why did they tell you to go 80% in equities?
Yeah, what did you say? Why? Why would I do that?
I fit part of what Terry has outlined there. Legacy is important. I don't have tons of money. I have been a saver and an investor. It was largely based on that latter point that they said, you can go higher, and that's what we want you to do. So,
well, they must think you're going to live a long time.
Yeah, I was
they
just going to say, how old is the person that gave you that advice? I'm serious.
How old is the person that gave you that advice?
One of them is probably 50, and the other one is 40-ish. But they let me emphasize, these are two advisors within one of the biggies. I'm not going to name, but it's like...
It doesn't matter. The point is, everybody out there who's over 60 will understand this. There comes a moment when, as the great sage once said, I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as I am about the return of my money. Okay? That was
right.
Bernard Baruch said that. Look, I just think...
What's the worst that could happen if you went 60-40? Well, I mean, you would
in hindsight, Bob. But here's the thing: you can't, if it doesn't make you comfortable. It's your money. You have to make that decision. I personally think that's a lot of equity exposure, unless we're talking about your extra $25 million, which you aren't going to spend in your lifetime. But if we're talking about you have enough money and you think you can now live nicely, you know you need equity exposure to offset inflation. Historically, it always has. Okay, you need 60-65% exposure to equities right now. I get that conservatively. But I see no benefit. They might be right. You know, the market probably will go to 45,000 in your lifetime. But in the meantime, you could have a 30-40% bear market. And how would you feel then?
Thanks for the phone call, Bob. More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Walmart has opened a new 500,000-square-foot consolidation center in southwest suburban Minooka. The facility opened on Tuesday and will bring nearly 700 additional jobs to the area. The center is located at 201 South McClendon Road and will use automated technology to improve Walmart's supply chain efficiency. According to the company, the technology can enable three times more volume to flow through the center and help Walmart deliver the right product to the right store. Multiple newspapers, including the Chicago Tribune, are suing Microsoft and OpenAI for copyright infringement. Eight newspapers owned by Alden Global Capital filed a lawsuit claiming Microsoft and OpenAI have used millions of their articles without permission to train their AI programs. The lawsuit says both companies are undermining the business model for news, and their AI products are intended to supplant news publishers by repurposing news content and delivering it to their users. The lawsuit also says programs like ChatGPT and Copilot have incorrectly attributed false reports to the newspaper, which they say tarnishes their reputation and spreads disinformation. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food, Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and I think this is going to be fun. A little game of Guess Who? Listen to the clues, see if you can guess who it is.
I'm the luckiest guy you're ever going to talk to.
Okay, here's another clue.
I love Chicago. I love you.
Okay, we love you too. And here's a hint. He is a celebrity.
I've had it pretty good. I've seen a lot of things. I've done a lot of things. Beautiful kids, beautiful wife, beautiful dog.
Okay, and I've got one more hint right after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today and every day. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. I don't know if our mystery guest has a Silverado, but he could afford a fleet of them. And here's another hint. He is involved in the business of food.
And people tell me where to go all the time.
And he goes, traveling the world to meet people and eat food with his brother Richard in tow. You've probably got it by now, but here's the giveaway. The theme song to his TV show, Somebody Feed Phil, now in its seventh season on Netflix. And Phil Rosenthal told our David Plyer he'll be appearing here Saturday at the Chicago Theater.
That's going to be amazing. Yeah. The Chicago Theater, I can't even believe it.
So what will the audience get to see?
Well, they see a little highlight reel for a few minutes of the show, and then I come out with a moderator.
A fellow by the name of Dean Richards.
We talk for about a half an hour, and then the whole rest of the show, another half hour, 40 minutes, is Q&A with the audience. And yes, I can answer any question about the show, about Everybody Loves Raymond, but I can also I can give you marriage advice, yeah. Whatever you want. I'm here for you.
And there's a meet and greet for people who sign up.
And I'm thrilled to do it.
Season 7 of Somebody Feed Phil visits a bunch of new cities.
Okay, Taipei has the best street food in the world.
The show is a huge hit on Netflix, but he says that does not guarantee there will be a season 8.
I never know. It's a different world now, and we could be gone at any time. I have no idea how the world of entertainment works anymore.
Phil Rosenthal of Somebody Feed Phil comes to the Chicago Theater Saturday night. Looks like there are tickets still available at Ticketmaster, and you can hear his complete interview with David Plyer at WGNRadio.com. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Terry Savage is here, and if you've got a question for us, for her, 312-981-7200. 630 texted in and said, hey, Terry Savage, what should we be doing with those I-bonds we bought when the interest was 10%?
Okay, it was 9.6-something, and I just today posted an update at terrysavage.com. The new rate starting today for new I-bonds purchased today is 4.28%. That's not so horrible. It includes a base rate of 1.3%, which stays with the bond for its entire lifetime. And then every 6 months, you get the inflation adjustment. However, very critical, if you bought those Series I bonds 2 years ago when they were yielding over 9%, it had no base rate, no floor rate at that time. And so the inflation adjustment part of the current, okay, let me start over. The current rate now starting today, 4.28, 1.3% is the floor. If you have an old bond with no floor, it is now yielding only 2.98% for the current 6 month period. That's the inflation adjustment portion, just under 3%. So if you have one of those old ones that were purchased back in the frenzy, I would suggest, as I did last month, that it might be worthwhile, it will be worthwhile, to take that 3-month loss of interest penalty, sell that old iPod that you bought, just the ones you bought when there was a zero floor, okay? This 6 months and the previous 6 months have a 1.3% floor, so you're okay. Sell it, then you'll put the cash back into your bank account through your Treasury Direct account, and then just go buy T-bills. If you want, you could buy the new iBonds as well. But the old ones are kind of stinkers now. They were great for a while. And you did get 9%+.
Well, you got it on the first
day. For six months. And a very high rate for the succeeding months. But now you're only getting 2.98%.
What happened to CVS?
Oh, this is a big story today. CVS reported earnings. The stock's down about 17%.
Wow.
CVS, you think of it as a drugstore, but it owns Aetna. And Aetna, like
life
Humana earlier, well, health insurance, too. And like Humana earlier this year, Aetna just dragged down the CVS earnings because why? They are big Medicare Advantage people. And the fact is that they've been losing money on their Medicare Advantage program, paying out over 90 cents on every premium dollar in costs because people are using more seniors, Now, what do you think is going to happen when you're the CEO of a company that says, we're losing money, we obtained all these advantage, we did these commercials, people signed up for advantage programs. We better not give them so much health care because we're losing money on each person.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I tried to warn you about last December, and you'll have another open enrollment period in December. These advantage plans are going to get tougher and tougher on allowing you to access services.
I didn't know that it was because they were losing money that they would then have to charge more in
premiums.
They're
not losing money. They get reimbursed from the government a set amount for each patient. This year, the government announced a lower than expected per patient reimbursement, and they're just not making money. I mean, they gave away everything from paddle boards to, you know, silver sneakers was always part of these supplements and everything, but they gave away all those commercials. Cost them a fortune to get you to sign up for Advantage. Now they've got the people, and they can't squeeze any profits out of it unless they curtail services. Someone's going to say to me, well, that you can't do that. But they were doing it, and you're going to see more of it.
We need a short answer to this one, Terry.
Sorry.
I'm retiring at the end of May. Where they contribute the matching amount to my 401, and I wonder if I should, after leaving, move those funds to my wife's 401, and she continues to work, and they will match hers as well.
No. Your wife's 401k is her own 401k. She can only make contributions at the company she works for out of her salary. If you're retiring, go to terrysavage.com, put the word rollover in the column search box, and it will show you how to do a rollover into something that can keep your money going directly. And I will tell you next week's topic. I know we're coming down to the end, but the Department of Labor just released a new fiduciary rule. I just wrote a column. We'll have it up next week. The fact is that financial services firms, particularly insurance companies, are standing there with open arms saying, you're ready to retire and roll over. You have all this money from the bull market. Buy these equity-linked annuities. And the Department of Labor is now going to make that a requirement that everybody disclose the commissions inherent in those, prove that those are the best product, which is hard to do. And we'll be talking more about that next week. So when you do your rollover, read that column, Rollover, which I wrote a year ago, how to do it directly to Fidelity or Vanguard. Be conservative. Do not fall for all these financial services firms trying to give you advice that buries the commissions in them and costs you a lot.
That's Terry Savage here on Wednesdays from noon to 1 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, John.